Senator Rucho is recognized to explain Senate Bill 4.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members of the Senate. Mr. President, I would ask for your indulgence. There are about five parts of this bill. On part one, Senator Tucker would be the one responsible to explain it. On two and three, it'll be myself, two, three, and five. And then number four would be Senator Daniels. So if we could follow in that order, I would appreciate it, and then each of us can fill in as you request us to do.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Tucker is recognized to explain the bill.
Mr. President, thank you, and members of the Senate. We have had a lively discussion in elections, redistricting, and also in finance. What we are proposing to do here is a board consolidation of the State Board of Elections and call it the State Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement. We're consolidating the board, which would increase government efficiency. It would streamline the ethics compliance and seeks to take politics out of elections and ethics enforcement.
Excuse me, Senator. Folks in the gallery, we are honored to have you here. This is a great part of the democratic process that we will have folks in our gallery, but this is also a representative republic, and these folks were elected to do the business of the Senate and the people of North Carolina here in this chamber. So there are no comments to be made in the gallery or outbursts of laughter or applause or anything else, but we're honored to have you here, and we'd like for you to stay here. But if that happens again, we'll have to clear the gallery. We don't want to do that, but that's up to y'all. So Senator Tucker, you have the floor.
Thank you. I'll just state again, we are attempting to do a board consolidation that increases government efficiency under one board, streamlines ethics compliance under one board, and seeks to take the politics out of elections and ethics enforcement by making decisions in a bipartisan manner. The bill removes partisanship from election administration and enforcement of ethics and lobbying by setting up an eight-member board to perform functions currently assigned to the State Board of Elections, the State Ethics Commission, and the Secretary of State. Four of the eight members will be appointed by the governor, and two by the Speaker, and two by the President Pro Tem. The Governor will appoint two Democrats and two Republicans. The Speaker and the Pro Tem will each appoint one Democrat and one Republican, meaning you'll have four Republicans and four Democrats on that board. And it will require a supermajority vote of six to take action. So that would encourage bipartisan cooperation between the two parties regarding elections and ethics. The county boards of elections will also follow a similar structure with four members on the board balanced equally between the two major parties. By the county, two Republicans and two Democrats. It also creates an opportunity to stop misinformation across silos in the current ethics compliance system. Decisions will be not bounced back between the two boards. Here, the bill encourages government efficiency by reducing the number of executive directors from three to one. It streamlines the process and puts a new board in a better position to act and to be a watchdog in elections. The bill does not change the current substantive laws, the education requirements that are in campaign finance, ethics, or lobbying, and maintains that the new board has the enforcement authority that exists under the current structure. So there's not substantial change in those areas. And by taking politics out of elections and ethics enforcement, by removing the taint of partisan advantage from these decisions, the new structure will instill greater public confidence in the new board. Elections are decided by partisan politics, as we all know. Election administrations and ethics enforcement should not. Ladies and gentlemen, Senate, we have gone to an extensive discussion about this part of the bill. I think remind all of us that we are somewhat volunteers. We put our name on a ballot to be elected and to represent the people. As we do that, many of us depend upon either ourselves or a volunteer to take care of our treasure reports and all the campaign education and innuendos that are required for us to stay in office ethically and to conform to the campaign finance laws. The State Board of Elections was asked some 20 years ago to set up rules that better define campaign finance and the rules in the State Board of Elections. To my knowledge, they have not done so at this juncture. So this will certainly move the process along, and I am available for questions now, or Senator Rucho, you want to just go through the bill and then respond to questions? Is that what you want to do?
Senator, we'll run through the bill, and then we'll do questions and debate afterwards.
The rest of my time, Senator
Rucho. Senator Rucho, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. Part two that I will try to explain deals with clarifying the legislative authority as to who draws the congressional and legislative districts. The Constitution is clear, and I'll cite you the article. It's Article 2, Section 3 and Section 5 of the North Carolina Constitution clearly states that the General Assembly, the legislature, at the appropriate times around the census and or other periods when required to draw the maps, that they have the responsibility and the authority to draw legislative districts. And all this does is it clearly states what the Constitution requires of all of us. The third portion, Mr. President, is partisan appellate court elections. Members of the Senate, for many, many, many years prior to about, I think, eight or ten years ago, the appellate court judges, that is the Supreme Court and the Courts of Appeal, were partisan elections. An effort was made to eliminate the partisan aspect of judicial races, and in doing so, since there is ethical barrier for understanding exactly what a judge may or may not stand for or how they would respond to any specific issue, then the voters of the state of North Carolina who should have the responsibility to select judges are really blind in the sense that what does this judge stand for? And so in an effort to try to return back to at least some semblance of or knowledge as far as making a decision, we're going to be adding the Republican and Democratic tags to the both the Court of Appeal and also the Supreme Court. And in doing so, there will be partisan elections, partisan primary elections, and then again, a general election will follow. Mr. President, I think Senator Daniel would take on the next one.
Senator Daniel's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. The section that I'll be talking about is the fourth section of the bill. It's on page 20 of the text, and it deals with the in-bank procedures for the North Carolina Court of Appeals. The North Carolina Constitution, Article 4, Section 7, authorizes the General Assembly to create an intermediate court of appeals that hears cases appealed from Superior Court prior to reaching the North Carolina State Supreme Court. The Constitution specifically authorizes the court to sit in bank as a full court or in smaller panels, but when the General Assembly in 1967 created the Court of Appeals by statute with a total of six judges, at that time the statute only authorized the court to sit in panels of three, and that practice has continued until today, despite the fact that nine additional judges have been added, raising the court's membership to 15, the court still continues today to sit in bodies of three. Over the years, this practice has become problematic as the Court of Appeals at times has inconsistent legal decisions among the panels, and it limits the court's ability to speak with a single voice. This bill eliminates the possibility of two inconsistent lines of cases developing simultaneously without the court being able to address it. Procedurally, the bill follows the federal court model, allowing the Court of Appeals, upon a vote of the majority of the court, to use its discretion to order an in-bank hearing either at the request of a party to the case or upon its own motion. Nearly every other state in the Southeast allows for this process, including Tennessee, Virginia, South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, and Mississippi. I would point out to this body that a bill essentially with the same text was passed in 1999, 2001, and 2005, made it to the House calendar on three occasions, and was pulled for reasons unknown to me. This bill was discussed in two committee meetings pretty thoroughly this morning, but if there are additional questions from the members, I'll be glad to take those.
Do you have any discussion or debate? Senator Rucho, for what purpose you rise?
Sir, I'd like to continue on part number five.
You have the floor, Senator Rucho.
And this is dealing with the Industrial Commission term and chairmanship. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, what we have before us now is come about because of a resignation due to health reasons on a member of the Industrial Commission. Approximately two years left on the term, and as we might expect, getting members prepared in what is a very complex area of almost like judicial review and the like, it takes time to prepare a member of the commission. So in essence, what we're looking at is rather than just saying 2 years for to fill an unexpired term, we're saying that it'll be 2 years followed by the 4 years. So it'll be a six-year term. And in addition, the governor at this time will be able to select the chairman of the Industrial Commission. Mr. President, that explains the parts of this bill, and we can respond to any questions accordingly.
Do we have any discussion or debate? Senator Bryant, for what purpose you rise?
To speak on the bill.
Senator Bryant, you have the floor to speak to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President, and ladies and gentlemen of the Senate. The assertion that the ethics and elections parts of this bill are bipartisan is disingenuous and inaccurate. First of all, this bill had no bipartisan participation that I've been made aware of, and definitely did not include members of this Democratic caucus. And ladies and gentlemen, bipartisanship starts at home. Secondly, Senator Tucker did not tell you that in transition to this so-called, quote, bipartisan board, unquote, the current ethics board, which is entirely appointed by Republicans with no formal input by Democrats, will become the Board of Elections, and the Republican appointee will remain as election director until May or June or perhaps even longer. Using the guise of the ethics board, again, entirely appointed by Republicans, as a bipartisan replacement for the election board is simply a sneaky move to grab power unfairly. We as Democrats, under any standard of fairness, are entitled to representation on the election board, and not just in registration, but representation that is appointed by entities that represent us. Yes, the ethics board has registered Democrats on it, but they are all appointed by Republicans. Thirdly, for the first time in recent history, Democrats will have no representation appointed by or recommended by Democrats on the Board of Elections. This ethics board, election board scheme you have come up with completely disenfranchises all Democrats from the election process, except if they are appointed by Republicans. However, Republicans selected by their party leaders get full participation. Fourth, to add insult to injury, you're forcing your political appointee in, as leader of the agency on us as director, even when we won the election fair and square, is undemocratic, oppressive, and demeaning, as if Democrats are unentitled to serve and lead, even when we win fair and legal, to use your term. Why are you more entitled to participate in governance than we are, and the citizens we represent somehow less entitled to have their representatives participate in the leadership that has been experienced in the past by both you and Democrats of the past? We should be allowed to participate in the process. We should have had time to research or be privy to the research on all the various models for bipartisan election administration. Instead, we are here being forced to vote in less than 24 hours on legislation drafted in secret in a surprise session that we were not informed of. This is self-serving and morally and ethically objectionable and undermines not only our election process, but the will of the people of North Carolina. Thank you for listening to my remarks.
Gallery. Gallery will come to order. That will be the final warning, gallery. There's no clapping or participating in this process other than viewing it. That is by the rules of the Senate, and that is part of the representative process. And again, we're glad you're here, but that will be the last warning, and then we'll clear the gallery. So, Senator Tucker, for what purpose do you rise?
To speak a second time on the bill.
Senator Tucker, you have the floor to speak a second time.
First of all, Senator Bryan has said that I did not tell you about the fact that the executive director will hold office until May. Reason I didn't say anything about that was as she brought it up in committee, I responded in committee. So she will remain until May, until the new board takes over, which will be four Democrats and four Republicans. And when a supermajority comes together, they will elect a new director. So that is what's happening in the transition process here. Secondly, she said that Democrats will have no representation on this new board and not appointed by Democrats. The last time I checked, the governor-elect is a Democrat, and he has four of the eight appointments. So he'll have that in May to deal with. And thirdly, there is no election that I know of between now and May. So as far as what can or can't be done as perceived damage by Senator Bryant and the folks that clapped, and I understand that, and I welcome them here as well, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Mr. President. But the fact of the matter is there'll be no action really for them to take other than the run-of-the-mill administration for the Board of Elections and cleaning up after this election. So those are the comments I wish to make. In May, it will be a new board and hopefully a new director. And with four Democrats and four Republicans, it'll force consensus on their part to come together to get a new director in a supermajority six vote. So moving forward, I think this truly is bipartisan. The other part of it is this is probably the only period of time that we could get anything like this done, Republican or Democrat. I don't think Governor McCrory may have done this. I don't think Governor Cooper would do this. And now we can have a bipartisan elections board, bipartisan with ethics, bipartisan with lobbying, and bipartisan with campaign finance reform. And we also have in this legislation a period of time of 1 year for them to make a decision. It has gone as long as 2 years before an infraction comes to fruition where that individual can deal with it. So it's a good piece of legislation. It is bipartisan, and in May it will truly be bipartisan. Thank you.
Senator Tucker, for point of clarification, that was your first time speaking to the bill. The other time was introducing the bill.
Mr. President.
Senator Bryant, for what purpose you rise?
May I ask Senator Tucker a question?
Senator Tucker, do you yield for a question?
Yes, sir, I do.
Senator Tucker, I was accurate, was I not, when I stated that in this legislation, for the first 6 months, the existing ethics board, which is all appointed by Republicans, will serve as the Board of Elections. I was accurate, was I not, when I stated
that? You were accurate, so we are not going to shut down the Board of Elections for it. You can't turn the light switch on and off. So, yes, in that transition period, that would be correct.
Follow-up, Mr. President.
Senator Tucker, do you yield? Do you yield, Senator Tucker?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We will be required under the, at least the federal court order, unless we get a stay, to redistrict the legislative districts by March 15th. Mm-hmm. So none of us can be 100% sure that there aren't decisions that would need to be made by this transitional ethics board that will be the Board of Elections and the director that would affect all of us, Democrats and Republicans, in the fall elections or otherwise, we cannot be 100% sure that there won't be decisions that will need to be made, can we?
Yes, ma'am, I think so. I think the current election board right now is bipartisan. It's 50-50 in its split there, so there are some Democrats. They're not all Republicans that are there. Who knows what the courts are going to do? Who knows whether a Supreme Court justice will be appointed and it can move through the U.S. Senate and it can be confirmed and be on the Supreme Court? So who knows about those decisions that are there? But in that transition time, nothing as far as, you know, legislatively or on the federal level moves very quickly. So I think there is a dormant period now where politics or elections are not going on, and they will not be going on through May, and those decisions will have enough time to be made as necessary.
Senator Daniel, for the purpose of your eyes.
Send forth an amendment.
We can send forward your amendment. Clerk will read.
Senator Daniel moves to amend the bill.
Senator Daniel is recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, this amendment addresses the question that Senator Blue raised in the Finance Committee today regarding the intent of the Section 5 of the bill as it applies to the member of the Industrial Commission who was resigning. And so basically, this just narrows the scope of that section, and I'd be glad to answer any question.
Do we have any discussion or debate on the amendment? Senator Blue, for what purpose your eyes?
To speak on the amendment.
Senator Blue, you have the floor to speak to the amendment.
It is a good amendment in that the bill is in its original draft basically left a loophole so that any of the members on the Industrial Commission could resign, and if they got reappointed before December 31st, they would serve the remainder of their terms, plus they would serve an additional six-year term. And so Senator Daniel saw that as a problem, and I commend him for the amendment.
Any further discussion or debate on the amendment? Hearing none, question for the Senate is the adoption of Amendment 1. All in favor, vote aye. Opposed, vote no. 5 seconds be allowed for the voting. Clerk, record the vote. Forty-seven, having voted in the affirmative and zero in the negative, Amendment 1 is adopted. The bill as amended is back before the body. Do we have any further discussion or debate?
Mr. President.
Senator Bryant, for a purpose of your eyes.
I have a follow-up question for Senator Tucker.
Senator Tucker, do you yield?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to clarify my facts before I ask you this. Are you aware that the current elections board
3-2
that we have, as well as the one you are proposing to come online in May or June, has members on it who are Democrats and Republicans, and they are recommended to the appointing authority by the governor from the political parties, you know, from names submitted from the political parties of those members. The ethics board that you are replacing the elections board with in the first 6 months has no such requirement. The appointments are all made by Republicans, in this instance, the governor, the speakers, former speaker, and President Pro Tem. There is no requirement of any recommendations by any Democratic entity, no representational affiliation, as is the case with the Board of Elections. That is the significant difference I'm pointing out. Were you aware of that difference?
Yes, ma'am, I'm aware of that. And, of course, on those appointments, you have to appoint one R and one D. So I'm fully aware of that. Yes, ma'am, I am. And I understand your concern about the executive director. I really think, having known you for a period of time, that that's probably an issue for you, and that can change in May. So thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Bryant.
Senator McKissick, for what purpose your eyes?
Speak on the bill.
Senator McKissick, you have the floor to speak to the bill.
We're here once again with a surprise piece of legislation
that's come up in a surprise session when we came up here to provide hurricane relief, and that's disturbing because we should be about dealing with the people's business here in North Carolina, what they sent us up here for. More importantly, it's really transparent and really clear that the simple purpose of this bill is to undercut the power and authority of Governor-elect Roy Cooper before he takes the oath of office on January 1. January 1. Right now, December 15th. It's the only reason why we're here considering this piece of legislation. And it has far-reaching implications. This power grab, and that's really what it is, we need to just call it what it is, an attempt to strip Governor-elect Roy Cooper of powers. Powers that our governors have traditionally had and have been provided to them underneath the law. We have to ask ourselves, Roy Cooper is our governor now. Regardless of whether folks wanted him to be the governor or not, he won it fair and square. If Pat McCrory had won the election, will we be here today with this piece of legislation? I think not. And why is it, if this was so important, that we couldn't have addressed it over the last 4 years when Pat McCrory was governor? And tell me, how does this bill affect the lives of North Carolinians and make it better? Well, we need to be addressing things that impact the quality of life, the education in our schools, jobs that need to be returned to this state. And we have to ask ourselves, would we not be better served if we use due diligence? Due diligence to work together. Over the long session, all of us that want to be interested, who are interested and want to be involved in this kind of legislation. Because if we really want it to be transformative in what we're doing, if we really want to be transformative, we come up with a way of including in a bill like this provisions that will allow for nonpartisan redistricting or either bipartisan redistricting. But that's missing. Even though we're in a court order by March 15th to go out there and change the legislative districts in this case. So you have to ask yourself, why are we here? Why are we here with the backdrop of all the legislation that's been introduced over at the House? And we know what that includes, and it'll be over here sooner or later, I suspect, and we'll be voting on it too. It's clear. It's transparent. It's obvious. Even Stevie Wonder could see this. And it's simply because it's a power grab to circumvent the will of the people and not give Governor-elect Roy Cooper the powers that he's earned, deserved, with the voters' support, but more importantly, with the voters invested in him as our next governor.
Senator Smith, what purpose your eyes?
To speak on the bill.
You have the floor, Senator Smith.
Thank you, Mr. President. As someone from a district that was devastated by Hurricane Matthew, I was glad that we were having a special session to address our critical needs. But we only appropriated $200 million, which is only about a fifth or more of what was needed. The special session in December after Hurricane Floyd appropriated almost $900 million. And then we were, with absolutely no notice, called into another special session to pass legislation that can only be called an egregious partisan power grab. It now seems to me that the hurricane session was just a ruse to get us here for this legislation and to use the hurricane victims as a ploy to pass laws that reduce the power of our next governor.
Do we have any further discussion or debate? Senator Bryant.
I just need to make one clarifying comment, Mr. President. A second.
You want to speak a second time, Senator? Yes, you have the floor, Senator.
Thank you. I just want to clarify that my comments were not in any personal disregard for our current director. I have no personal disregard for our current director. I'm talking about the partisan nature of the law keeping that position, but more importantly, is having this transitional board upon which I have no representation. That was the other important point, and I didn't want that to get missed. Thank you.
Senator Brown, for a purpose of your eyes.
Speak briefly on the bill.
Senator Brown, you have the floor to speak to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, committee today, I tried not to go here, and I really didn't want to go here because I don't think it accomplishes anything, to be quite honest. And Senator McKissick almost forces me to do this at times. I know he does it on purpose, I think. But he kind of does, and I just got to touch on a few things. I guess I'm one of those that had the opportunity to serve in the minority for 6 years before I served in the majority. So I get to see both sides of the issue. And I just remember when I was in the majority, when you talk about legislation, I remember when I got it, it would burn your hand, and then we'd vote on it about an hour later. So that's how much notice I got when I was in the minority to vote on legislation. And that happened quite often. So, you know, we've had good debate today on this bill in two committees and discussed it in length. So at least someone's had time to read the bill and make a reasonable debate. As far as Senator Smith goes on the relief, I just want to touch on that. As we said before, this is phase one. We understand we got to come back. I think we're all trying to figure out exactly what the needs are. And I think we all made a promise that we will do that. And we will try to take care of the needs of the storm, of Hurricane Matthew, and what has happened in the West with the fires as we get more information. And I think we made that promise. And I think that's what we'll continue to do. Senator McKissick, you always mention legislative districts. It's interesting because Republicans only got to draw it one time. I mean, in 150 years, we never drew districts. And you guys could have had an independent panel for 150 years, but it was never important. And now, all of a sudden, it's the most important thing you've ever heard of because we get to draw them one time. I think that's kind of interesting how things change. If you talk about what others have done in the past, in 1976, it was in the press. You may want to look this up. But it was called the Christmas Massacre. That's what the title was from Governor Jim Hunt. That's a real good title, the Christmas Massacre at Christmas time, talking about all the people that he came in and laid off. Nobody talks about that. And think about when Jim Gardner was elected as lieutenant governor, all of his power basically was stripped as lieutenant governor. By who? By the Democrats. And that was okay. Superintendent of Public Instruction. Think about the power that the superintendent had all stripped away from him. All by the Democrats. I didn't want to bring these things up because it doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't. It really doesn't. But you guys act like, you know, we're the worst guys in the world. We hadn't even touched what you guys have done. And to be quite honest, Senator Blue, we didn't even think about the piece that you did. You guys are smarter than us. You think about more ways to trick the system than we could even think of. And as far as the Industrial Commission goes.
Senator, let's stand. Senate, we'll pick back up with you in a minute, okay. but we're going to stand at ease for a minute while the Sergeant Arms clears the gallery. I'm sorry for all of you who have sat there quietly and decided not to disrupt business, but all the hissing and the hand signals does disrupt business, so we're going to clear the gallery, so we'll stand at ease while the gallery gets cleared, so stand at ease.
a good sleep. Started it.